Welcome to another episode of Three Men and a War Game. I'm your host, Paul, and I suddenly feel the overwhelming urge to play some Kill Team.
I'm Chops, Wakanda forever.
I'm Potter, and as always, I never know what to say after Chops.
I'm always trying to give some hint as to what we're going to talk about in the episode, as obscure as it might be.
Yeah, which
that
is...
That one's pretty obscure.
No, I understood exactly where that was going.
I mean, I know, I get the reference, but no, it's still pretty obscure.
So, T'Challa, what kind of name is that? but when that movie came out and Chop sent me that, the pun husky doing that face to it was amazing.
Yes, no, that was good. I sent that out several times as well, too.
Because Chops knows how much I love the pun husky.
Mm-hmm.
So,
the greatest meme ever.
It's pretty darn close. It is absolutely pretty darn close. It's right up there with my, well, I guess my favorite gif would be Fry from Futurama going, "I'm shocked, shocked." Well, not that shocked. That's normally my political post reaction. So, yeah,
Chops has got me using the other Fry, gif of, "Here, take my money."
Well, I think every miniatures game company should just start paying Chops, because I'm pretty sure he's selling a lot of
hype.
Yeah, and if it's not to our listeners, it's at least to Potter and I,
and people locally too. Yeah, in my local community.
Yeah,
I get the hype strong.
And friend of the show, Jim. I'm pretty sure he spent some money because of Chops.
All right. I have a feeling he's going to like the Kill Team episode since he requested it.
Yeah, he did request it on Twitter, did he not? Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. That one was for you, Jim.
I mean, it also Chops has helped single-handedly, bring back the North Carolina Wild West.
Wild West Exodus. I love it. Over here from snowy Wisconsin.
I know, he's not even in the state, and he made a community.
Ah, so good.
I think that's the best part. But yeah, so speaking of communities, one of the things, well, I guess the thing we would like to talk about tonight is a upcoming game. I guess we're going to get hyped again. You know, last time we got hyped about the Kill Teams, and this time we're going to get hyped about a Kickstarter game that's finally arriving.
And I guess I'll jump in because it's tertiarily related to my favorite game, which is Malifaux.
Yeah.
For the people who don't know about Malifaux, it takes place in a world across what's called the Breach being in Europe, and it's basically a portal to another dimension with monsters and magic and soul stones and all kinds of cool stuff. But the whole story and the meta narrative of Malifaux, there are also people Earthside, and Earthside could also be called the other side of the Breach.
And
the game we're going to be talking about is The Other Side.
Wow, look at how you did that.
I like it.
Yeah.
I wonder if that was planned.
It's almost like it was almost like they meant it to be that way.
So Paul, tell us, what are the core tenets of The Other Side? If you had an elevator pitch to The Other Side, what would it be?
If I had to elevator pitch The Other Side, I would say it is a game that is a larger scale game. However, it plays fast. You don't have the ridiculous amount of models, but you still get that feel of a company-sized game, and you also get a game that has quality objectives and an extremely tight rule set.
All right. So things we know, right? Things that are similar to Malifaux. Uses a fate deck, right?
Correct. Chops, can you tell us about the fate deck? Because that's an extremely unique mechanic to weird miniatures games in general.
Yeah, all their game systems, right, are all diceless. They all use a modified standard playing card deck. So rather than the four suits you know and love, you have four different suits so that Weird can sell cards. But the suits are Rams, Tomes, Masks, and Crows. And in those sets, you have the same cards you would have, 1 through 13. There are no face cards. It's just 1 through 13 because it helps with math. And then you have a red joker and a black joker, which are worth 0 and 14 points, respectively. And how a fate deck typically works is when you have a duel between two things or you need to take some kind of check, you flip a card and then add the value of that card to your stat value. So if your attack value is 6, you flip a 3, you are on a 9. And that is the absolute basics of a fate deck.
Yeah, and one of the other things that's a pretty key mechanic to Malifaux and also the other side is the fact that you can cheat cards to change your result.
Right. And the thing about the main difference between the other side, right, is that the command hand is very differently sized. I don't know if you want to sort of describe that because you've played more other side than I think either me or Chris have at this point.
Sure. So in basically what it is that in Malifaux, every turn you are able to draw back up to your max hand size, which is 6. And that happens every turn. And there's a fluff reason for that. And that's what's really cool, is that in the fluff reason for it is that in Malifaux, magic is much stronger. And that's one of the reasons why humanity is in Malifaux, is because they're trying to get soul stones because they became dependent on them on Earth, and they don't have access to them. So they're essentially mining them out of Malifaux. So magic is extremely strong in Malifaux. So you can adjust your fate by getting that hand of 6 cards every turn. And the other side, you don't always get 6 cards every turn. And that's one of the main differences there, is that you actually have essentially what's called a tactics token that you get at different points in the game. Sometimes certain models, when they activate, will get you tactics tokens. And so you have to decide at the beginning of your turn how many of those you're going to trade in to get cards. So you don't always have that opportunity to say, okay, if I do this, I'm going to miss. So let me use my higher card that I have sitting in my hand to adjust my value here and to actually accomplish what I need to accomplish. So you get some resource management in there right off the bat for your hand size and the cards that you want to use.
Which I think is really cool.
Yeah, it's a very interesting way of showing that fluff change of the power of Malifaux.
Yeah, I think it makes every duel, as the parlance in Malifaux is, a lot more impactful too, right? Because you don't, a command hand of 6 sounds like a lot, but it doesn't feel like a lot when you're playing Malifaux. Especially when you draw a bad hand,
yeah.
And in it's even lesser in the other side, right? Like the cards themselves are going to have a lot more sway, which I think is a fun idea, especially with the format and size of this game.
Yeah, I also like the fact that the cheat mechanic is different in it as well too, because like in Malifaux, like you're cheating after the fact, like you already know what your opponent's flipped, like so you already know, like okay, cool, he's got a 7 and I flipped a 5, so now I need to get an 8 to, you know, for this not to happen in my master not die. Like in this game, it's a very big bluff mechanic. Like you're like, all right, cool, I'm going to attack. Do you want to go ahead and cheat now? Like you don't know what you're going to flip, and it brings a whole different level compared to what Malifaux is to this, to make it have a similar mechanic but yet different at the same exact time.
To make it a little more specific, in Malifaux, the person who has the lower total in the duel gets to cheat first. So they can cheat up. So the attacker, you know, or you can always make that decision. Whereas in the other side, if you are the attacker, you cheat first.
Yeah, right. You have to cheat first as the attacker, right? Whereas loser cheats first in Malifaux. So that's the difference.
Correct. It's very interesting because it definitely changes the way you're looking at
cheating. Tools.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fundamental change.
It is. It's very different. It's interesting how such a small change like that in order creates a much different mindset in how you use your cards.
Yeah, much different. Yep, for sure.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, and again, it ties it into Malifaux, yet different at the same exact time.
Yep.
Very different.
Yeah. And just to trickle into another thing that makes the other side different, where Malifaux is very much a skirmish game with a small amount of miniatures. In the other side, you are working in what are called fire teams. So the fire teams are essentially, it's a large plug base. What I mean by that is it's a large base that has spaces to fit smaller models. Most of them, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, Paul, is an 80 mil base with 330 mils inside of it.
Yep. That's like the most standard size.
Yeah. So, and also there aren't wounds like there are in Malifaux. Your wounds are just the amount of guys that you have on one of those bases. And then typically a squad is made up of 1 to 3 fire teams.
Correct. And one of the design goals of the other side was that they didn't want you to have to use a marker for tracking wounds. Right.
Yep.
So that's the point of all the models on the table, is that those are your wounds for the individual fire teams, and your fire teams are, you know, making up your larger units. So it's great that you can have that. And the other thing too is that you can constantly, as long as somebody in that fire team is alive, you can keep bringing back individual models. So you can keep essentially healing your fire teams.
Yep, and that's done with, unfortunately, the same resource you need to draw cards.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
You use your tactics tokens to get reinforcements.
Yeah, exactly. You can use your tactics tokens, and you can also have ways to give yourself reinforcement tokens.
Reinforcement tokens.
So it's very resource dependent. But, you know, and the other thing too is that since one of the genius things about the game is that even though it is a larger game size, it's played on a 6x4, unlike Malifaux, which is a 3x3. So it's played on the same size board as 40K. You're not flipping a card for every individual guy, right? You're flipping cards for fire teams. So when you're when a fire team is making an attack, all three models on that base are included essentially in your flip. And the way they represent the power of a full fire team is that only full fire teams can cheat. Right, so once you're losing models, you can't cheat because you're not as proficient at what you're trying to do. You don't have as many shots going into the enemy, you know. So you don't have that ability to cheat, which is really interesting.
So cool, yeah. And then the other thing is that the objectives are more like a traditional war game. Unlike Malifaux, where you have a global strategy and unique schemes, it's just like a single scenario. So it's more like your standard scenarios, but the scenarios are really cool.
Yeah, they are neat because they're a good bit different from Malifaux, but somewhat similar because there are ones where you'll have to be putting down objective markers and
Right. It's a game with button pushing, right? So where, you know, 40K doesn't really have a button pushing mechanic. That's a big separator between the games like of the things like Malifaux and Infinity, right? Is that button pushing is a real thing. And that's a cool thing to see in a company scale game.
Yeah, exactly. That's not something we've seen before at this size. So it's going to be interesting. And the ability of the fire teams is what's going to make that possible.
Right. And then talking about this, right? So one of the things that's really cool is when you activate a squad, right? So if a squad is made up of three fire teams, then you actually move all three of those fire teams, and they can all do things that are independent as long as they stay in coherency with each other. So you could have, you know, two of them fire and one of them doing something else, like button pushing. So essentially, like, you know, it's what that represents thematically is two of the fire teams providing covering fire for the third one, which is pushing a button.
Right.
Or doing a thing, right?
Yep, exactly. And that makes it really a really cool thematic view. You know, if you have King's Army guys, you know, laying down that fire and the other guys putting setting a trap or whatever, you know, that's
right. Yep.
You know, and what's interesting about it, one of the things, I guess the easiest thing to compare it to other than Malifaux is 40K, is that 40K, you're moving so many fiddly guys around. You know, you can have a Necron warrior unit of 20 models and, you know, to move them all around, but here you might have 9-10 guys in a squad. But yeah, since they're on those plug bases, you're just moving those plug bases and you're done. So it plays quick and you're not rolling all those dice. You're flipping the one card for them, you know? So the speed of the game is super quick considering that there is a 6x4 company game.
Right. And you don't have the holy trinity of like attack roll, wound roll, save roll, right? You just like both of you guys flip a card, you cheat or you don't, something happens and you move on. It's very fast resolution. There's not a bucket of dice. I have no shame in my love for Malifaux, and specifically what I love about Malifaux is the fate deck mechanic, and I'm very, very excited, so excited to play in a full company size game.
Yeah, it's especially with the resources being a little more limited than in Malifaux, you know.
Yep. All right, hang on. So, go for it. And so what was the thing that got you most excited when you first saw the Kickstarter?
You know, for me, I have to be honest with you. When I first saw it, I said, yeah, I'm not going to play that. I really did. But then as I started looking at the game more, for me, the idea that you could have a company-sized game that plays quick, has an extremely tight rule set, just was perfect. Absolutely perfect. And it takes the things that I like about Malifaux, because I used to be into Malifaux the way you're still into Malifaux. But then I started seeing the downsides to Malifaux. And so I kind of stepped away from it. Yeah, yeah, I know. It's questionable. And a lot of people tell me I'm wrong about what I see as downside. Which I understand. That might be a conversation for a whole nother episode. Is just to talk about Malifaux
for sure.
But for me, this takes the good things about Malifaux, makes them better, and gives you some new mechanics and some new ways of approaching the game.
Cool. I will say what I was excited about, and what I'm still really excited about, is the models themselves. I have always loved weird models. As a Gremlin player, I've had some experience, though, putting together weird models that were not so positive. And these models maintain that very high quality, and they're all pre-built. I'm so excited. I'm one of the people who, like, as far as modeling goes, I love painting. Sometimes I like kit bashing, but I don't love assembling models. So I'm really excited that I can just pull these bad boys out and paint them, or also just pull, like, immediately start playing the games. Oh my God, so good. So that's the thing that was really excited. Also, one of the things, as a skirmish gamer, I was always jealous of watching war game, like big war gamers, where they're giant models, you know, like knights or like giant battle engines and war hordes. And we're gonna get those in this game. You have giant models in this game, and they are amazing. If you want to go look at one, look at the Gibbering Hordes one. It looks like a giant swamp creature. So rad.
Yeah, and they've done a very good job of keeping themes running in this game, and that's one of the great things about Malifaux, right, is that they do a great job of making these crazy thematic things happen. Like you were talking,
oh yeah, the world, yeah, is
it's,
so good.
It's a brilliant world. I mean, other than 40K, I don't think there's a better environment in a world, in a miniatures game than what Malifaux has created.
I would agree. I
mean, hands down. You know, like you talked last time about the campaign and the gremlins having the y'all watch this, right? And they go and blow themselves up. So like even that Titan, the alpha crawler for Gibbering Hordes, you know, they have an upgrade on them where they're basically taking these smaller parasite type crawlers that are on them and tossing them across at the enemy. And, you know, it can stun the enemy because they're going, what the crap is that? You know, it's essentially like a screaming Mimi type thing. So, I mean, just that theme is in there. Oh, and I remembered what I was going to talk about. So one of the other great things about it is that talking about what it's pulling so well for Malifaux is triggers. How could we have forgotten about triggers, right? Right. With Chops going back and, you know, talking about the suits on the cards, right? So different suits can give you a special ability if you're successful. Right. So
yeah. So to describe that in an interaction, if I'm attacking Paul's model and I flip a card and win, like let's say I'm playing with the King's army, whose most of their triggers are built into the Ram suit. If I flip a card and I win the duel and my card is a Ram, I can get a bonus from that Ram called a trigger.
Exactly.
And those
will, you know, do more damage or allow you to move or something. It'll give you something extra on top of whatever damage you might be doing as well. So it creates that, just that little bit extra and that tactical decision making, because you might be successful with the card that you have, and you might have a different card that has a suit that you can get to get a trigger.
Yeah, and the themes are even built into the suits, right? Like rams are typically things that increase damage. Tomes are typically things that are magical in nature. Masks are typically shifty. They might make you move around. And crows are like bad news bears for anything involved. They're usually like a resurrectionist used them to resurrect stuff. When you're playing gremlins, the crows are triggers that do damage to you when you flip them. So that, and the theme is even tied into the card suits themselves.
Exactly. And that's one of the things that makes the game so completely thematic, you know. And the other core mechanic too, and this, I think this is part of what really hooked me into the game, is that, you know, the game's called The Other Side and it's meant to be on the other side of the breach and all that stuff. But you have two sides of your card. Right. And in Malifaux, you're constantly looking at both sides of the card to get all of the information for your model. Right. You have your kind of standard abilities on the front that might always be active, but you get onto the back and it's got your attacks and maybe some tactical abilities that you have. But the way the other side is designed is that you never have to look at more than one side of your card at a time. Right. So you can just have that card down in front of you, always just look down and see all of the information that you need. Now, that being said, the cards are still two-sided. So there's a mechanic in the game called going to glory. And when your squads go to glory, you get to flip the card over, and the backside of the cards tend to have better stats, more triggers, and either higher damage or a higher attack value. But one way or another, you're getting more benefits out of using that backside of the card. And it's basically a reverse psychology from what you used to see in war games, right? Because psychology isn't a real big thing. War Machine got away from fear checks, and 40K uses them in such a different way that it's almost not even, you know, a psychology element anymore. You're not going to see gremlins running off the board like you used to, right? You know, you could spend 6 hours setting up your orc and squig army, and all of a sudden they all run off the table in turn one, right? So when they were setting up the other side, they were like, well, what if we took that and flipped it on its head and have the psychology, instead of being a fail and bad things happen to you, why not have them be your army getting better, your troops seeing something good happen on the battlefield, so they're more anxious to fight, or they're more willing to fight, or they're going above and beyond for the things that they saw.
And then what gets me hype about this feature is that it ties back into the theme even harder than anything else in this game, in that every faction goes to glory in a specific way that works with the theme of that army.
Exactly. And that's one of the cool things. Like, Hey, Chris, you still there?
Dude, I'm listening to you guys just geeking out over this, you know, because it's rebuilding.
All right, good. That's what I wanted to make sure. I wanted to make sure you're there.
Yeah, no, I'm still here. Like, I just for me, like, you know, because of the fact, like, with, you know, this is going to be my first true experience with Kickstarter. You know, so I have been a little jaded by how long it's been taking me to get models in hand. And so, like, my hype is for this game has just slowly but surely devolved over time. And
because it's
taken
a long time,
you guys talk about it, it's like, oh yeah, this is why I like this game, is all the stuff you guys are talking about. And I'm just like sitting here like, yep. So for me, I'm a listener.
So Fodor, to bring you back into this a little bit here, you are playing an army called King's Army. Do you know how they go to glory?
Yes. Yes, so King's Army is really cool. So for you guys that don't know, like, you know, King's Army is very much like, you know, pre-World War One, you know, British military. So it's all, you know, long range attacks, shooting. Like, you know, and if anybody listens to the show sees about the armies that I pick, I love the range game. So I pick King's Army. So their whole thing is they go to glory when they kill off a fire team.
Yep, when they shoot them off the board, they go to glory.
Yep, and it's because it's everybody's like, yeah, we got them, we got, you know, and then they just go crazy, and then they flip, and then they just get even better at shooting.
And that's what I like, is it's thematic. You can imagine those guys in World War One, you know, getting excited, seeing something, their attacks be successful, and wanting to accomplish more. Chops, what are you looking to play in the game?
So it's funny, right? Like, I kickstarted two factions, and I started as wanting to play one, and then using the other as like a demo thing, or maybe selling it, because I kickstarted at a level where I got two armies, mostly because I wanted to be able to demo it. But I kickstarted for the King's Army because that was what was initially very exciting to me. And I am still excited, especially to paint them, because I love the aesthetic of the King's Army. I think it's fantastic. But the other faction that I kickstarted is the Gibbering Hordes. And the more I read about them, the more I think they will be my primary army. And I am super stoked to play them.
Okay, so how do they go to glory?
They go to glory by eating other gibbering hordes. So they are basically disgusting fish monsters that have come out of the ocean to cause havoc and basically reave and eat. And one of their units is called an egg clutch that goes forward and puts off little things. And they go to glory by eating the things that come off of the egg clutch. And they also have a core mechanic where they rejuvenate, right? So they're like, it's just like an endless wave of things that are coming at you. And you're watching them eat each other as they're running toward you, going to glory and tearing your shit to shreds.
That is actually a perfect description of gibbering hordes. So that actually covers two of the four factions that are coming out at release. So one of the ways that they're breaking it up is that you're going to have Malifaux side armies and Earth side armies, and Gibbering Hordes are a Malifaux side army. Fluff wise, they are creatures from Malifaux that have been living under the oceans after being banished from Malifaux and are now rising and coming up and attacking humanity, essentially. But the other Malifaux side army is called the Cult of the Burning Man, right? And if you're up on your Malifaux fluff, at one point the governor of Malifaux, the governor general, tried to become a tyrant god and horribly failed. And on the Earth side, you saw him in flames in the sky. So these guys. Yeah, these guys have kind of become, you know, a cult worshiping him, and they're all twisted and horror. And what's interesting about the way they go to glory is they go to glory by getting multiple stun tokens on them, which generally are a bad condition to have on you. But since they're all going crazy, that is what allows them to go to glory, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, making them go crazy is what glories them. Yeah, and the way that they sort of counteract it is that they have very, very high mobility because they have portals that they can flip across on the board.
Yeah, their portals are pretty
where they need to go when they need to get there. So the stunning will prevent them from moving across the board in a way that a traditional unit does. But since they can have portals close, they don't like it's not as bad as you would think, but it does slow them down a little.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting when they get moving. And they can put portals out before the game, and some of their units are basically walking portals. Yeah,
walking portals.
And I mean when a squad goes into a portal, all the fire teams in there jump around, right?
Yep, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, and all I know is I played Susan one time when we were going through the beta test, and those portals, they weren't fun. Not for King's Army. It was not.
Yeah,
was
they'll not fun. They'll jump all over you. That is for sure. And
I mean, having them in your face turn one.
it's evil. And the last army is Abyssinia, and this goes back to Chops at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah, so Abyssinia is basically Wakanda. So the nation of Abyssinia was the first nation on Earth to have soul stones, and also had a plethora of them and guarded them jealously and came up with some pretty dope technology. So while everything in the game has a sort of like pre-World War II aesthetic, and that's sort of where the tech is with a little bit of steampunk mixed in, Abyssinia is way further advanced because they have had soul stones for a very long time, and they've got tech that no one else does. So they are the Black Panther faction.
And that, I mean, that's honestly exactly what they are. They have motorcycles and giant walkers and all that kind of cool stuff. So they're pretty fascinating to watch. So since we covered how everybody goes to glory, and as you can see, it's all very unique. Oh, we didn't talk about how they go to glory, did we?
We didn't. And we didn't also mention that Abyssinia is Ethiopia. For people who don't know, the current African nation of Ethiopia used to be called Abyssinia, and that is what the Abyssinian Empire, where they're from in the other side.
And the way that they end up going to glory, again, is unique because they have to have I don't remember the exact number. It's maybe a +4 differential on a flip, right, in a duel.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. It's a big differential duel. I think it's actually, Paul, it's a 6+. It's the thing that would get you into a straight flip.
Okay.
And Malifaux is what gets you to glory. But that's not as uncommon as you might think, right? Especially when cheating is less of a factor in this game. It makes the Abyssinian playstyle such that when you get high cards in your hand, you value them highly because you're going to likely use them to glory specific units at the right time. And I think it's really interesting.
It's a neat mechanic.
But it's basically like our technology is superior, and since it's so superior, we're now fucking amped up.
Yeah, like, oh, did you see how well that, you know, tore that guy up? So all of these armies have a very unique play style, right? And that's what makes this game really interesting, you know, because you have your gibbering hordes who are constantly coming back, even more so than other factions, because all factions can heal their fire teams, but gibbering hordes can bring back wiped out fire teams, you know, like wiped out squads. So just because they're off the table doesn't mean they're not coming back.
Yeah, it doesn't mean they're gone.
Yeah, exactly. And your cult of the Burning Man is moving all over the place because they're jumping around using their portals. The King's Army is shooting you from afar. You know, they have a big giant robot with a Gatling gun, essentially. So all of those styles are extremely unique, and it gives such good flavor to the game. It really does. And it's amazing how well they've done that. And one of the other differences too, and I think this allows for that flavor to really show up, is that and compared to Malifaux, there is less dependence on synergy. Right, so in Malifaux, you want all of your models working closely together because, you know, this one might make you hit better, and this one's going to make you do more damage, and so all three of them. Yeah, combos huge are a combos. Thing, sure. It's a very important aspect of the game that's not as important to the other side. That was another one of those conscious gameplay decisions I believe they made going into this game, is that we don't need as much high synergy as we do in Malifaux, and it'll keep the game playing faster. And it removes some of the weird combos and timing issues that you might find in Malifaux.
Yep, I would agree with all that from the rules I know.
So I think it keeps it playing smooth, which is a lot of fun. Yeah, so the game itself, right, went into Kickstarter, what, December 2016? 17.
Sounds right.
What are we in, 18? Yeah, so December 2016.
2016.
It was 2016. It's been over, yeah, it's been over a year.
All two.
Yeah,
it's been almost 2 years.
It was supposed to, original launch date was, or ship date was December of 2017. Got pushed back because the models weren't coming out quite as nice as they wanted them to. So they worked really hard on getting them to look good. And I mean, they're really good models. What Weird has shown us has just been absolutely incredible. Because I mean, they used to have they had one update where Aaron was throwing them at the wall and they weren't breaking, which is amazing.
And I think they've even taken them on the road to some of the cons and stuff that they've gone to show them in person, because they've known that people have, because it's the type of plastic that they're using. They're using a softer type of plastic. And so people have been concerned about the sculpts and the molds and everything else like that. And from what I've seen, where people have talked about it at the cons, like the models, like there isn't a worry, like they're legit good. And, you know, yeah, it's a softer plastic, but they're still holding a ton of detail. They hold up on the table. That they're good models.
Yeah, and that's part of the key there, is that they look good. They're quality models, and I think people are going to get their money's worth out of them for sure. Potter, this is your first experience with Kickstarter. How are you feeling about the game so far?
The game as a whole, through the playtest that we got to do that you let me do, I enjoy the game. I remember there was like 2-3 weeks, you know, maybe probably even almost a month, where like that's all we did was play it. I really wasn't looking forward to the whole every model's one wound kind of aspect, because like my big giant robot walking across the table is one wound. Like that was kind of dumb to me. But now playing Wild West Exodus and seeing those mechanics in that game, because everything is one wound in that game, but the mechanics around it that allow stuff to survive, like it kind of allowed me to wrap my head around more about the mechanics that they're building into that game for that. So like as a game as a whole, like I want to play Toss. I want to play the other side. Like I'm super excited to play the King's Army. It fits my playstyle 100%. It fits all the kind of stuff that I love about, you know, World War One, World War Two history. I love it. But for me, what's been that negative thing is, like, again, this is my first Kickstarter, second one, but you know, first one was a video game that came out on time. So like I never had to deal with any of this kind of stuff, and of where stuff just keeps getting delayed. And then, you know, seeing what happened with Steamforged, with the Dark Souls campaign, and then finding out, oh wait, if this company just decides to keep my money and just go, sorry, we're not going to do it, and I get no type of return, like that's kind of made me iffy on the whole Kickstarter thing. So that's where I'm more a little bit jaded, and it started to make my hype for the game much less. And so it's like, that's why I haven't been really talking this time, is because like half the stuff I don't remember, because it's been so long ago, and I haven't been keeping up with the game because of the fact that my hype has been lower. But you guys talking about it has reminded me all the things of like, oh yeah, that's why I like this. Oh yeah, this is why I felt like this was better here, and how they did it better in this game versus what they did in Malifaux. Like, so my hype is building, but I'm still a little cautious about the Kickstarter aspect of it.
And we're so close.
I know, and it's been nice, like the communication that Weird has been giving everybody. Like every time there's a delay, like they're sending an email out, they're letting everybody know, you know, the fact that they're saying, look, we are not selling this stuff until your backers get their kits. I mean, that's on the Kickstarter website. They've made official releases about that in the emails. They've made that very public. You know, so I've really like that about them. I feel that that's adding back to my, like, okay, cool, I want to support Weird, because they're making a good decision. Their stuff may be ready, and it may be ready to sell at Gen Con. It may be ready to sell at Adepticon, or you know, pray to God it doesn't wait till Adepticon. But you know, the fact that they're making that conscious decision that our backers haven't got their stuff, we're not going to give it to them, even though we're ready to sell this stuff right now. These people need to be taken care of first, and I really appreciate that from Weird. And you know, and the other thing that's kind of got me a little bummed about is like, I don't know where the future of this game is going. You know, this game was Aaron's baby. Aaron's no longer with Weird. How is this game going to progress? Will it divulge from what he did, where I felt like he made a game with very, you know, concise, very simple mechanics of the game, there everything was balanced and felt good together? Are we going to get to where we're at in Weird right now with Malifaux? It's like where every time a new book comes out, we get all these 10 new conditions because these new models have to be unique and interesting. I'm like, you can still have unique and interesting models without all these, you know, adding all these different conditions to the game. Are we going to start seeing that in the other side? And I'm hoping not. So I'm a little worried there as well, too.
So one of the things with the other side is that it's going to be set up more like Guild Ball instead of Malifaux, where it's going to go wide instead of deep as far as factions. So really, I guess you could look at it more like Age of Sigmar with Grand Alliances, right? So you're going to have more factions that come in on both sides, right? Instead of going and creating more and more gibbering hordes, you know, we'll see other things that can play on the Malifaux side. So it allows all the units and armies to keep their uniqueness, you know, because I'm sure a lot of that uniqueness is going to come from how they go to glory.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I do like, and one thing we did forget about was like they have built into the game the dual faction commanders. So you know, you have the ability where you know, if you want to play a pure Earth side army, but you want to play like that Earth side, like you know, Abyssinia and King's Army have way where they can play together in the same army. So I like that. And if they're going to go down that road of like going deep or going wide instead of deep, you know, I would like to see, you know, how that kind of mechanic in the game expands. You know, what kind of different combos and options can you throw together in the future when those kind of things come out? So, I mean, if that is the plan for the game, I mean, I didn't know that part of it, but like I said, you're a hench, so you get a lot more information than I do. So, you know, that would be good. Like I would be excited to see that because I do like that aspect of how they've changed things up in like 40K Age of Sigmar to be a little bit more of that, like throw all these kind of armies together because they're working for the same goal. So it makes sense for them to work together. And so if they do that in this game, I would love to see that.
It's going
to
be interesting. It's going to be really interesting because they, I think that's something that they're going to be fostering, as they move along. So I'm glad to hear that you're getting excited about it again, because I know you were pretty bummed for a while once it got pushed back.
Yeah, I mean, I actually got to the point because I know you and I, you know, are splitting one of the dual faction kits, and like at a point, like I really actually thought about like I'm gonna maybe get a refund on my money. Like I was there at a point because again, it wasn't the game. I think Weird has produced a solid game from what I played, from what I remember. From you know, reading and seeing, like, and my hype was real, like, and I was like, Chops, looking at the models is what got me into wanting to buy this game, but the Kickstarter is what has ruined it for me. And you know, again, my first experience, and unfortunately my first real experience, and unfortunately it is just happens to be one that where there was delays, and I think Weird is doing the right thing by delaying. You know, they're making sure they're putting out a quality product. They're making sure everything's done right. They're making sure they're getting, you know, shipping fees and things like that taken care of. That's not going to be gouging people's pockets. You know, I think they're making good business decisions. I'm just salty because I put money 2 years ago and I don't have my product. And that's my issue. And that's more of just I'm a stupid American and I'm gonna have instant gratification and I want my shit now.
Yeah. Yeah, that is the downside to Kickstarter, is that you don't get the instant gratification.
Right. So, I mean, again, I'm going to be super happy because this game was massively Kickstarted. I mean, I think they unlocked almost the majority of all their stretch goals. So like people that did get the Kickstarter, I mean, they're getting tons of free models. So, I mean, I can't complain about that because I'm going to get way more than what I ever paid for in this game. And even what I paid for, I'm already getting a ton of models that are, you know, it's like what the 300, it was $300 and you get what, a commander, three or four units plus your big giant robot. I mean, that alone is probably almost like $400 worth of models, and we're getting it for $300. So I'm getting $100 yep. worth of free models, plus the book, plus cards, plus tokens, and now all the new free models that we get because of the Kickstarter stretch goal. So I can't complain about it too much. It has been a little bit of a letdown for me that has lessened my hype. But again, I support Weird and the decisions that they've made. It's just lowered my hype for the game.
Well, we'll get you there. We'll get you hyped. I know that's going to come in, and the fact that you can open up the box and start playing.
Yeah, I mean, I guarantee the day, I already know, the day that it comes in, I'm going to be like, you're going to be texting me, hey, it's here. I'm like, where the fuck are we meeting?
Yep, pretty much. We're playing. Pretty much. It's going to be the hype of the day.
Yeah, and I feel like once I get the models in hand, all this is going to go away. Because I did enjoy the game experience that we had. Like, obviously, I know that it's probably not going to be the same because obviously they probably went through more beta testing cycles and other things like that. So I think the core game is going to be there. Obviously, two or three things might be different. But, I mean, I do remember, like, having a ton of fun playing this game to the point where we actually got in arguments with the Malifaux group here.
Yeah, they still don't like us for that.
They don't, I know, but it's no hard feelings. I like them as people, like, you know, just Malifaux. Yep,
which
just
is understandable. All right, well, man, we killing this episode on the other side. So I have a feeling we're going to be talking about this game quite soon. Maybe once it's in our hands, which should hopefully be within the next couple weeks, which is exciting. So mid August. So Chops, any last comments on the other side?
Wakanda forever.
And you're not even buying that army.
I know.
That might be buyer's remorse on your part.
Oh, what I will say, no, I do have a final remark actually, and that is to the listeners who might be afraid at the deep depth rather than width, or width rather than depth. You should look at the models on offer in the Kickstarter. The factions do have quite a lot of options, even the four as they are in their initial release. So if you're the kind of person who wants a lot of unit diversity, don't be afraid. The unit diversity yep. is going to be there. And you can just go look at the Kickstarter to see the proof.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at right there, like King's Army's got, including commander models, which there are three of them, 12 models. For the 12 models / units for the
types, right? And that's not like sculpts. That's like unit types,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's unit types. There's 12 different unit
right, because you have the rifleman, the dude on the scout bike, the infiltrators, there's all sorts.
The velocipede,
yeah.
Dual commander.
Yeah. Yeah, so 12 different units, three of them are which your commander models. One being a dual commander, two being a faction-specific commander. And I'm pretty sure everyone is set up the exact same way.
And there's other stuff we didn't talk about, too, but just wanted to say that the unit diversity is there, and also Wakanda forever.
Potter, any last thoughts on the other side?
Tons of airbrushing opportunities for me to learn on. That's what I'm kind of excited for right now.
Awesome. For me, I'm getting hyped up again about playing the Gibbering Hordes because if you know me, you know I like the creepy crawly armies most of the time, Wild West Exodus being the unusual one that isn't like that. And this is one hell of a creepy crawly army that just keeps coming back. And I know it's just going to annoy the fuck out of Potter every yep. time I put a fire team back on the table.
Yep, it sure will.
If you are on Twitter, follow us at Three Men in a War Game, the number three, not the word. If you are listening to us on iTunes or the podcast app, as it's now called, leave a review, subscribe, Podbean, iTunes, wherever you might listen to your podcast. Thank you for listening.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Thanks, everybody.
Shit, I forget what I was going to say.
I don't know, Paul. What were you going to say?
Damn it, I don't know. I don't remember now.
this is a break stuff. For editing.
Yeah, this is where we edit out my schmuckiness, because